from San Francisco, California. This is Mostly Music. And now, your hosts, Ignatius Palafox and the Low Spark.
Oh, yes. Thank you for joining us once again.
One more again.
And thank you to Bud Powell for helping us out here.
He's on the keys.
Oh, man. Yeah. Pretty much revolutionized the keyboard, or the piano, I'm sorry. You know. He's been considered, and he's been called, the Charlie Parker of piano. You know, they're contemporaries. He was born in Harlem. But, you know, he changed the game with... he did away with the traditional left hand, you know, rhythm, and started to state with chords on an irregular basis, almost single-handedly modernizing the piano, which is kind of how we think of jazz now. But in the 40s, you know, it was all still pretty traditional.
Yeah.
He was sort of taken under the wing of Thelonious Monk in New York, and Art Tatum as well, some huge influences on him. He's just a goddamn master. And you don't hear enough about him because he kind of went crazy.
Yeah.
Actually, he really went crazy. But,
like falling in love with a pigeon? Kind of crazy?
No, not like Harvey. No. No, in 1945, he was at a gig. So this is the story, at least. And then he got, I don't think he was with this band very long, but he got separated from them. I think they were in Philadelphia. He got separated from the band and then ended up sort of wandering the streets. And ran into some railroad police, and they just beat the shit out of him.
Yeah.
All night. And then they turned him over to the city police, where they held him for like 5 days. And then after that, it was just, you know, he was never the same.
Shit. And, head trauma or just PTSD?
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
or...
Massive. Oh. Creatively, I think he still had it, but at the same time, it affected him. And so he went back to New York and still kept playing. But then I think it was like in like 3 years later or something, he was in a bar in Harlem, got into a fight with another customer. The guy hit him over the eye with a bottle. They sent him to the hospital, and then they said he was acting erratically, rambunctious or whatever. So they sent him to Bellevue,
Fuck.
The mental hospital, where he stayed for like a year. And he got out of that. Then he was pretty much just in and out of mental institutions the rest of his life. And then in like the 50s, he got sent again, and they did electroshock therapy to him, you know, against his will,
because that always works,
right? It's the 50s, you know. And then supposedly his girlfriend came in one day and told him she was pregnant, and then so he got excited, so they shocked him again. He was super fucked. Yeah, but, you know, then he died in the 60s of tuberculosis, but...
Consumption,
that's right.
In the 60s, it was referred to as consumption.
Yeah, it still is. I still
Damn, that's the worst kind of fucking luck, man.
But he's got that that uncontrollable spirit, you know, that dynamic...
It's funny because someone that's so... You would expect to hear more free jazz piano ship from him because of... the personality that you say he has, but it's very clean.
Oh, he was a genius.
Yeah.
He was like very, that definition of like a mad genius, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, it's heavy, precise notes.
Yeah, and it's
almost
very,
like staccato.
Yeah, it's really weird timing. And if you watch jazz live now, they're all doing that. They're all, if you watch their left hand, it's nothing like a classical where it's keeping the rhythm. It's always like on the offbeat, you know.
Yeah.
But I mean, before him, it just didn't really exist. You know?
I wonder why that is. It's just the way his brain worked, or
I guess, you know,
personal taste, style, comfort.
I think it's, you know, the evolving of any music genre. It's you sort of take what came before you, and then you try to make it a little bit different. You know,
evolution.
Charlie
sound.
Parker, Dizzy Gillespie were doing that with the trumpet. You know, they were taking like what people did before them and turned it into something.
Coltrane with the sax.
Right. Into bebop. Yeah, exactly. I think even in 47, he got a chance to play with Charlie Parker's quintet, which had Miles Davis, Tommy Potter, Max Roach. And I think that was the only time he ever played with Charlie Parker.
Fucking Death Squad.
They had a sort of like a feud kind of thing going on, you know, throughout like their entire lives. Because they were both gods, you know. They were both, like, the height of their instrument, you know. But
to master something like that, it's...
unreal.
It's unreal. You, like you said, you lose yourself.
God, he's good.
That's fucking impressive.
Yeah. So,
yeah. Dude, I mean... you just record. It sounds like one of those one take things where it's like take one, only one take, and you record it and you, that's it, like you get that one grace on record.
Yeah,
like it's like, you know,
yeah, you don't have touched. Unlimited amounts of tape back then.
No.
If you can't do it right the first time, they'll figure out and they'll find a kid who can't.
Yeah,
yeah,
dude, yeah, like the musicianship back then was just fucking, I mean, compared to now, like where it's just, oh, it's so overproduced and edited, and it's like snippets of this and snippets of that to make a master.
Oh, like, you fly a guy in from Nashville all the way to New York just to do one overdub on one track, you know, just to get it, you know, perfect, which is, like, it's fine. I mean, it's kind of like Stephen Stills when you think about it, but
yeah,
which isn't always a horrible thing, but something does come out of that. I don't know.
Well, what was I talking about? Oh, the concert, like seeing live music when someone can sound better than their album, draw you in and kind of change you, you know, with a live show. It's a rare fucking thing.
That's the true test of a band.
Of a band. Like Phoebe Bridges. Phoebe Bridgers with that one in the hotel live performance of her one song, Smoke Signals. Amazing.
Yes.
All her other versions sound like shit compared to that one.
As well as kind of like the Grateful Dead were notorious like that. Like, they could never get what they wanted in a studio album, but live, they were maybe the greatest band of all time.
Yeah, yeah. It's so funny because Middle America, like, yeah, I drive for Uber. So all these Middle American kids, like the kids from the flyover, they'll get into the car, and I picked them up from... I picked up a couple of kids from, you know, Grateful Dead disbanded and after Jerry died. And each one of his members, most of his members of his band... started their own things because they had their own things going, so they just, and they're allowed to play like great dead music, you know.
Yeah, and they still get together,
yeah,
and call themselves
or
they're the New Dead, or they're,
you know, they do Phil Dead. Lesh and Friends, shit like that.
Yeah, exactly.
So I picked up some kids from Fox Theater, and they were seeing, I think the bassist, was it the bassist or whatever, one of the musicians from Grateful Dead, and Lesh. He had a concert. No, not Lesh.
Bob Weir, maybe.
No, Vassel.
Mickey Hart, he still plays a lot in the city.
Somebody else.
Bill Kreutzmann? Is he still
alive? That sounds about right.
Is he still alive?
Yeah. I don't know.
I hope so.
But it's funny because Middle America kids, like, they know all the lyrics to all these fucking songs, and they're visiting San Francisco, and they're living that new age hippie life. It's like
a dream.
And they're like 21, 22. Yeah. It's like, dude, he left an imprint on these fucking people, especially like upstate New York and fucking, you know what I mean?
Oh, man. The Grateful Dead transcends time. Yeah. And I mean, that's like the one band where, if you know, it's okay to listen to, like when you're a kid, if your parents are still listening to it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just generation.
Yeah.
Generation.
Yeah,
yeah. They sustain.
That also comes from, it's weird because that goes hand in hand with privilege around here. Like if you're from here, you didn't give a fuck about the Grateful Dead. They're assholes. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a drug addict, whatever, fuck them. He ruined a lot of kids' lives. But if you're from if you're a white kid from Middle America or the East Coast and your parents listen to fucking Grateful Dead, is because, you know,
maybe we just take it for granted.
They're yuppies, yippies, hippies, you know,
and all
it's privilege. So here, like the kids from the street, they don't give a fuck about.
Well, there are so many different factions of Grateful Dead listeners and
fans,
like that come from it totally different ways. I mean, or from totally different places. Even at their shows in the 60s and 70s, there
was the left side of the stage, the right side of the stage, center stage.
Yeah, the spinners and the hippies, and then there's like the hardcore bikers, which always was kind of weird to me. But I mean, but the thing is, it's the music that brings everybody.
No. It's the drugs.
I don't know. I obviously that had,
because that had I was when I was at the Phil Lesh show and I took my first dose of massive amounts of acid. I was like, I know these songs. I grew up with it. It's cool. You know, it's everyone's happy. Blah blah blah. Whatever. It's kind of creepy. And then the fucking dose hits. I'm like, this is the greatest music I've ever heard in my fucking life. But it wasn't.
Well, I don't know, man. I don't know about that. I don't know. It's
far on the mountain.
Well, see, there's so many. Like, when I think of the Dead, I think of the 60s Dead and early 70s. And for me, that's the Dead, you know.
Yeah.
Working Man's Dead.
You know, and then it was just like them playing their catalog. And, you know.
And they kept making records, I mean, even through the 80s. But again, like, and then that attracts a different set of people that like the.
Then you got like the spinoff bands like Dire Straits and shit like that, you know.
Well, I think. Fish.
Oh, good.
But again, a band that I would really say I prefer
Deadheads to fucking Fishheads, man.
100%.
Yeah, Fishheads are just so.
No offense, dude. I don't really know anything about Fish.
You don't want to.
Those things that if somebody didn't like give it to you when you were younger, like somebody older than you, like introduce you, you're never gonna get. You're never gonna get into it, you know? Because they're even on a sub. Below even like Dave Matthews Band, who at least did make some commercial success.
I swear to God, Dave Matthews Band will haunt me till the day I die. I was driving, so 104.5 FM here. What is it? Is it called? I forgot the name of the station. Is it the
Koit? KOIT?
No. 104.5. Anyway, 104.5 FM, San Francisco. They do sunset and sunrise, like acoustics. I was coming home on a Sunday and it was Sunset Acoustic and they were playing a live version of a Dave Matthews Band song and it was one of the greatest songs that was ever written and it was this is me sober, you know. And I'm like, fuck, this is a good fucking song. And like an idiot, I didn't memorize the fucking name of the track. Ooh. And of course it was a live track and I'm sure it has like hundreds of versions of it. Yeah. So I'll never be able to find that one sound.
Mm-hmm.
So unfortunately, I'm probably going to have to go to a Dave Matthews Band
concert. So because you weren't a Dave Matthews fan, so you didn't...
I love Dave Matthews.
You weren't like, oh, I know that's from that album. Or,
I know, I don't know you that. You weren't no. like that. Yeah. I couldn't even name one of their albums.
Right. You can't name one Dave... Wait, shit, can I?
No, I don't think we can.
Under the Table and Dreaming.
There sounds, you go. Sounds about right.
That's what. That's all I got. Crash. There you go. I grew up with the
Dave. But I did go to a concert recently with my little brother. I was talking about how he just take me to that Shoegaze show at the Fox Theater. Amazing.
Yeah, how was that?
Slow Dive. Amazing.
Okay.
Fucking, they put out a new album after 22 fucking years of being on hiatus.
Jesus, new stuff or old?
Yeah,
archive
no
stuff?
New stuff. Wow, yeah, it's in the fucking album kills. It's fucking good and live, fucking amazing. The music was so loud and profound that within the first two tracks, a kid passed out and had to be carried out. It's loud, that's loud, awesome. Loud, like reverbed, droning guitars. It's
that's great news because I feel like nowadays shows are never loud enough.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna play a track for you. Imagine this being next to the speaker, floor to ceiling, fucking speakers.
Were
at
you
the
there?
Fox
were
Theater.
You like? Oh yeah, Fox is.
Yeah,
that
I was
big.
General admission.
Yeah,
like maybe 10 people back from front stage. This is a Sugar for the Pill from Slow Dive's 2017 self-titled album. Yeah. They were missed, man. Their influence on music was so big. Like, they were gone for 22 years with nothing except for their side projects that nobody really cared about. They got dropped from their label because of bullshit that happens. You know, they got lost on the fold and the exchange from tour to tour. They were touring with, like, other shoegaze bands like Catherine Wheel, Galaxy 500, you know, shit like that. All great bands, but, like, mostly one-hit wonders. But Slow Dive, like, it affected the sound to the point where you're like, why does that sound familiar? Because a lot of people try to sound like this. They created this sound. They weren't just shoegaze. They were fucking, like... They, like, reinvented the way you approached playing live guitar with, like, dozens of pedals, you know? Melody, straight melody. Like, it sounds somber and sleepy, but live, it's like you get hit with this wave of just perfect sound.
How many band members?
Five.
Oh, okay.
So you have the two vocalists, the lead singer and the backup lead singer, which is a female. I don't think she comes on this track. Then you have a lead guitarist, rhythm guitarist, bass player, and then she plays backup rhythm every now and then, and she plays other random instruments, and then they have the drummer who's just master drummer. Yeah. It's so good.
Did they have an opening act?
Yeah, it was a band called Candied Cherry. It's good. Female front, Japanese female keyboardist, backup vocalist, bass player, and the drummer. So it was a four-piece. Candy Cherry was good, but I can tell. I was like, why does it seem like it's her first time playing guitar? And my little brother was like, oh, I've seen them. I didn't even see, but he's heard them, and she didn't know how to play guitar very well. Like, it's known that she sucks at the guitar.
What?
And, yeah, she's hot. She's like smoking hot, but she's like a crazy pushing 40. Like, smoking hot, like, musician.
She's 40, and she still hasn't learned how to play the guitar.
No, but I could tell she just figured out how to shred. So she was, like, exaggerating, you know what I mean? She doesn't know how... She was shredding on the guitar, but didn't know how to posture herself to hold the guitar properly. And she was staring at her fingers, like, intently.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Yeah. So, and her onstage presence was kind of, like, it was a little contrived. Yeah, but it was good. It was good. I mean, they didn't deserve to open for Slow Dive. That's a direct quote from my brother.
Pitchfork says, the shoegaze legends return with their first album in 22 years, a precise and altogether gorgeous showcase of their peerless ability at production, mood, and songcraft.
Perfection. They're masters, studio and live. That was.
It's good to have them.
Yeah,
there.
Like I
that's
got.
Hit, that's great.
I got hit with emotion. I was like, "Fuck!" It's like it's that fucking good. It's that fucking good.
Fuck, man, I should have went to that show.
You should have. I think it might have been sold out though.
Mm-hmm.
They play again. We're gonna go see it. Their light show was amazing too.
Right. It sounds good. It sounds. I wouldn't have known that was. 20 like that was modern, you know. It seems.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, well, that's I
like
well,
they haven't lost a beat, kind of thing.
You know? I came up with this scenario in my head where, like, oh, they just like you know got lost in another dimension and came back playing, you know, better. Oh, they just disappeared. But a lot of bands stole their technique, stole their style, stole their sound. Borrowed, I guess it's music. So
yeah, yeah, everybody steals everybody, right?
Yeah, that's
the whole thing.
Soundtrack to my life, Slow Dive.
That's the opening track for the movie of your life.
So
sounds about
close
right.
The curtain it's on the, act one,
the opening credits. Oh, to close act one. Okay. That sounds pretty good.
Don't know where the protagonist is going. Like, he's got these like debates going on in his life. It's like, oh, I don't know what he's gonna do.
Sounds like a good movie.
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah, because it feels like their first albums were like them as older musicians, and this new one is they sound young. You know,
they are old now, but
oh, they're old now, but they're making music that just it's within themselves better than 90% of the music coming out right now. Album's fucking beautiful, man.
It's great. It's nice.
What else you got?
Well, speaking of soundtracks, I thought it'd be fitting to cover a few things. basically music from movies that, you know, that have affected us. And we actually have an email here. By the way, to everybody listening, please send us your comments, questions, observations about life in general to mostlymusicpodcast@gmail.com. Probably should have prefaced the entire show with that, but mostly music podcast.
We didn't even do our introductions. Gmail.com.
Jules got us. Yeah, so, and we actually do have one from Kiz Incorporated.
Mm. Mm-hmm. WizKiz.
A great old fan. Hey, motherfuckers, you guys gotta give David Lynch and Twin Peaks some credit.
No.
Where's the Twin Peaks?
An entire episode.
Sure. And you know
full
what?
Full dedication.
You're totally right, Kiz. 100% correct. And by the way, I have peppered in a few Twin Peaks songs in the last few months.
Yeah.
Just because it's like possibly the greatest thing I've ever seen on television.
I can't watch it.
It's unbelievable.
I'm not going to watch it unless I have.
It's disturbing.
I'm going to get a girlfriend just to watch it with me.
Well, okay, so, but the soundtrack, if you want to call it that, it's sort of just, you know, every episode, almost every part, excuse me, not episode, almost every part ended with a live set from a band.
I can't hear that from an artist. Nope.
Because Lynch has historically, you know, had the best, some of the best musicians and song, you know, soundtracks for all of his movies. And lately he's been working a lot with Johnny Jewell, who's, God, I mean, this guy's everywhere. And he's like four projects. He's got the Chromatics, which are, you know, pretty heavy in Twin Peaks and a lot of other David Lynch projects. But also Glass Candy.
Okay.
Desire.
Uh-huh.
So, and this one might be familiar, but this is sort of, it's got this cerebral, temporal sort of digital underlining, even though it's all analog, supposedly. I mean, I've never met the guy, but Johnny Jewell is famous for using only analog equipment and everything, you know, and it's usually him and maybe like a female, and it's pretty much it.
Sharon Van Etten?
No, she's got her own deal going. But this song is called Digital Versicolor.
It's like I'm lost on a highway. No pun intended.
I think when Lost Highway came out, well, it's when he was just starting out in the early 90s. So, yeah. You know, who knows? But, oh, man, it's so good. Yeah, no, this is it's just a duo. They formed in Portland, Oregon in 1996. The vocalist's name is Ida No.
Ida No?
Yeah.
Is this, she related to I Do Know?
I don't know.
I think the only artist that's actually making anything that sounds anything like this is Kavinsky.
Ooh.
And Night Call.
Yeah.
You know,
oh, yeah.
Soundtrack to Driver.
Yeah, Drive.
Drive.
Yeah. When they were about to start shooting Drive, they went to a Chromatic show, or maybe it was a Glass Candy show, and Johnny Jewel was performing. And I guess the whole crew went and saw them play, and they asked him to contribute to Drive.
Yeah.
Actually. And so Nicholas Winding Refn always has fucking great music also. And I believe Johnny Jewel did Windswept for Bronson. Remember the movie Bronson?
Yeah,
that movie's nuts. And so think about that. Nicholas Winding Refn, like one of the craziest, best filmmakers contemporary right now, and then David Lynch. I mean, the guy's working with everybody. But I'm actually glad that you brought up Kavinsky. That's funny because that's what I was thinking of, and
Night Call.
Yeah, and when you hear that, it sort of like sets the tone, which is another great. The music for Drive was, I mean, it set the tone for the movie.
It's amazing. Yeah.
I saw an interview with Johnny Jewel, and he was saying that was like the only time he had ever collaborated like for a movie where he, like, it was almost 100% what he was expecting. You know, like the tone and the mood and everything, like it fit. Like, you know, because I mean, for musicians, it's kind of like being like a screenwriter. Like, you write something, and then it's off, and it's out of your hands, and then people just do whatever they will with it, you know, and you don't have control over the final product, usually. Kavinsky, Night Call.
Yeah, that's, we'll play that another. I'll play it now. This is my favorite part.
It's weird. I'm not generally, well, I don't know. It's hard to classify any of this music, and it's not just this. It's not just that, but it's addicting. In a sense, you know, it sort of envelops you.
Well, it hits a note, you know, a personal note. It twangs something inside of you.
Because it sounds slightly 80s, right? So is it hitting like a nostalgia note in us, or is it?
I think it kind of is, because
it's old and new.
Younger kids, they listen to it, and they're like, "Oh, I'd rather hear the remix, upbeat, different sounds, like the DJ I like." You
more
know what
bass
I mean?
Or something, yeah.
Yeah.
Need that.
It's like, oh, listen to this song. It's like, do you know that song originally is done by this person and it's better? They're like, "No, I like it like this." You know what I mean? Yeah. So I think that has something to do with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's that analog sound, man. Like that, that deep flat, like mono kind of.
It's alive. Yeah, it's real. It exists. There's air being pushed from one vessel to another.
Yeah,
and it's creating sound. It's not just ones and zeros.
I mean, if you love live music, analog instruments, things like that, Neve boards, you know, that plays for you. It's like you hear it, you feel
it's
it.
The only way to go.
Yeah.
I mean, otherwise you could just push the space bar and just sit there and, you know.
So I love that when an artist that's a musician, you know, not even well established, but like they got the chops and they make a track for an album, a soundtrack album, and it's like it's perfect. It's that good. It fits the film, you know, the genre, the vibe. It sets the tone. And one of my first soundtracks that I bought was the Kraft soundtrack.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that was good.
It's good. It's got a lot of covers.
I owned that CD.
Yeah. I bought that a few times. but one of my favorite guys, it's another one of those things where you're asking, well, this is another segment we'll get into later, of what were they doing then? They made an impact, and where the fuck are they now? And this guy is Matthew Sweet.
Matthew Sweet. Yeah, that's right.
He played one track that everyone knows called Girlfriend.
Right.
That's like the big like mid-90s hit. But my favorite track of his is called Dark Secret that was on the Kraft soundtrack. Pretty sure it was made for the film because it fits way too well. So this is Dark Secret, Matthew Sweet, the Kraft soundtrack.
You are sickened by the weakness of a heart that's filled with fear. And if the world won't understand you, you can make it disappear. There's a dark secret carry with you, carry with you. Deep inside the way you hate them, on the outside doesn't show. Slave to what you know. It's a dark secret. Carry with you. Carry with you.
Oh, that is definitely made for the movie.
Fuck.
Somebody's either playing a saw or a theremin, but there's something
theremin.
Very spooky.
Yeah, it's a theremin.
In there. That's great. You don't hear that every day.
I knew a girl once that
played
a saw.
It might be a saw. It might be a saw.
No, it's too good. It's too precise for a saw.
No, exactly. That's the thing. Theremin isn't... I feel like a saw is more precise. Yeah, because it's physical. You have physical manipulation.
Yeah.
I mean, there are people that are theremin, really
it's hard
good
to
at
manipulate
theremin.
Electricity, static, yeah.
So, I mean, people conduct like orchestras.
I knew
with
a girl that played a saw.
That's hot.
Oh gosh,
that's
so
legit,
fuck.
Dude. That's a keeper.
Fuck. no, Matthew Sweet, man. Like he had some hits. Like
this. Yeah, this. I don't know. This song doesn't ring a bell at all, man. I mean, it's been a long time, but this is great.
This is. I think this song was written for that ugly witch, evil witch character, the dog face one.
No, she was dope.
I loved her.
She's the best.
Because she's like, you're so weak. You're weak inside.
Wait, the crazy one. Right?
Yeah,
the
one
in American History X.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah.
Like,
by the way, whatever happened to her?
And what? Heroin. I don't know. Whatever.
Wow, what was her name? That was
Shit. Fucking Mandinga knows her name. His name's like
She has a weird name.
Yeah, Bagulia or something weird.
Firuza Balk.
Yeah, Firuza Balk. Yeah. Veruca Salt.
Yeah, it's like Veruca Firuza.
But no, Balk. Man, Matthew Sweet, that's like, legit. He made albums that I knew of until like 97, 98, and then I stopped listening to him. But he created albums like every few years, like, till like recently.
So was it that he disappeared or that you just stopped listening?
I stopped listening and nobody talked about him. Like, everyone's like, Matthew Sweet. Like, you ask anybody right now, like, Matthew Sweet, they'd be like, who the fuck is that?
Right. Yeah.
But he had some big hits, you know? He had his top 10. Like, especially, he had, like, heavy MTV rotation for, like,
really?
Music videos. Yeah, it was weird. Yeah, but no, he just became irrelevant. He just became like a, you know, just fell out of the fold.
But that happened. I mean, that was a common theme for most '90s artists.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. Well, except for I want to play another one. If you don't mind me doing back to back.
What you got?
One of my favorite movies is
Romeo and Juliet.
Romeo and Juliet by Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet.
Oh, okay.
So the soundtrack.
Yeah.
To that had fucking
Radiohead.
That's what I'm gonna play. Ooh. Talk show host by Radiohead.
Yeah, okay.
Like, but Radiohead, like, this is still considered one of the greatest bands of all time. Like,
sure,
they didn't disappear. Yeah.
Oh no!
But it's fuck, yeah. Man. Like, I go through their catalog maybe once a month. Like, just play the first track that they ever put out to the most recent track. But this is a talk show host for the Romeo and Juliet soundtrack.
I want to. I want to be someone else, so I'll explode, floating upon myself.
You don't get better than that.
That
dude.
Takes me back.
Damn, what a fucking soundtrack that was, man. Garbage.
Oh, Garbage.
Garbage on there.
Really?
What happened to them? Nobody wants talks about her. Like, what's her name? Shirley Manson? Shirley Manson.
They were good.
Well, Shirley Manson said some stupid shit recently. Nobody likes her.
Uh-oh.
She said some weird, like, anti-feminist shit. she's still fucking hot to me. I don't give a fuck. she's crazy.
Yeah, I'm not gonna get into that.
Not on this show.
Not in this day and age. No.
But no, man, Radiohead's been doing it big forever. 93?
They have.
93.
Oh, yeah. It's, yeah, they, and of course, this ties into, you know, Johnny Greenwood has done many soundtracks.
Their lead master guitarist?
Yes. He was, I think, a little younger than all of them. He was always like, the sort of like the Ringo of the band, right?
He's
really
like,
good.
He was the spine of the band. Good. Besides,
no, of course.
Besides Tom York's
like
awkward
the
voice,
kid, though. I'm pretty sure he was like.
He can only name two members: Tom York and Johnny Greenwood. That's it. Yeah. Nobody else exists. Who? What? They replaced the rest of the band. Nobody knows.
But you know, Paul Thomas Anderson has a strong relationship with Johnny Greenwood.
Yeah, oh, okay.
Did The Master, of course, which is just one of the great.
Yeah, it's a great fucking. Yeah,
There Will Be Blood. Johnny Greenwood did the music.
What? He did? Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. It's incredible, you know. And he has that it's he has such a broad range, you know.
Yeah.
Where he can just do classical string pieces and then, you know.
Were they from Yorkshire or something like that? England? Some
Yorkshire?
Some?
I don't know. I have no idea, actually. I feel like I used to know that, and you know,
no, it's just like
goes away,
filed away.
Yeah, it's gone. I had to like learn something else, and then I had to push that out.
It's filed under like Duddits.
I did. Now, if you could name, and by the way, I have Dreamcatcher right there.
Yeah. I got to start reading more fucking Stephen King. Yeah,
it was. I don't know how this came up the other day, but I was. I came to the realization, I was just having a conversation with somebody about literature and how there's you know, there's nobody, like, somebody said something like, oh, there's nobody like Shakespeare anymore. I'm like, well, no. And then I, for some reason, I was thinking, well, actually, no, I think Stephen King is the modern Shakespeare. Because in Shakespeare's time, he wrote, I mean, all that stuff was pulp, you know, it wasn't high art at all back then. No, yeah.
It was comical. You know, yeah, it was relief from reality.
Right. It wasn't fancy. It wasn't this elevated form of art that we think of it now. No, it was just, he was cranking them out one after another.
Or she had to.
For the sake of the conversation and for Shakespeare, let's just call it he.
Let's just watch Shakespeare in Love. He's not, tell me.
But no, there's that corollary now. Who is doing that now? Who is spanning decades and writing, and everything he writes is a hit? And for the most part, it's hard to think of a Stephen King book that didn't become a movie.
Oh, the authors.
I mean, everybody.
Stephen King.
Virtually every book he wrote until, you know, maybe the mid-2000s became something. Even now, I think he has like a show on Amazon, what is that? The Bubble or something?
Something, the Tower.
The Dome. The Dome.
The Dome. That's a good fucking show.
That's Stephen King.
I know.
Right? I mean, from, of course, The Shining, which is arguably the greatest movie ever put on film.
The Shining.
Copyright. That's The Simpsons.
Copyright infringement.
To, you know, I mean, even Shawshank, you know? So it's not just horror, you know? It's...
Yeah.
He does everything.
I mean,
and everything he does is a goddamn
Stand
hit,
by man. Me.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So if we do have a Shakespeare... I don't know how we got into that, but I wanted to give a little credit to Stephen King. Reading Stephen King is great. It's just, I mean, it's like watching a movie, you know?
Yeah.
Page turners. Anyway, I guess it's, I don't know.
It's related
to the music for the new It, but well, you know, what are you going to do?
Ugh. I don't want to talk about that. What do you have for me? You have more soundtrack?
Why, you want to get a little Johnny Greenwood? From, you know, he also did Inherent Vice, which is Paul Thomas Anderson's newest movie. I was at the premiere at the Castro. Paul Thomas Anderson, he says that's like his favorite theater
in
the country.
Oh, yeah, so it's a great theater.
He brought his 70mm print and went there.
His print.
I got in, yeah. Oh, yeah, well, so, because nowadays, you have to sort of barnstorm it. Like, if you have no film house or you know, production agency wants you to shoot in 70mm because it's just so... difficult. Most theaters, the majority of theaters, don't even have a 70mm projector, and the ones that do are, you know, spread out all over the country. So he literally took it to theaters that he of his choosing all across the country. But the first one was here at the Castro.
He's a true artist.
It's incredible. I was there, and we had already bought tickets. It was sold out, but I got tickets like a month in advance, and then we showed up an hour early, and there was a line like in the entire block. So we got like the back of that line. By the time we get in, and Castro's a big theater,
yeah. You know,
we get the very back row. We're sitting in the very back row, and there's like two seats next to me that are blocked off that say reserved, and I assumed it was like for press or something. And then they do the intro to the movie, and then Paul Thomas Anderson comes out. I think he says like six words. He's like, "Hey guys, thanks for coming here. This is my favorite place. I love the organist."
The organist, yeah.
I forget his name. And then, but he knew his name, of course. And then he proceeds to walk down the aisle. He sits fucking right next to me. And I'm like shitting my pants.
What do you do?
I'm shitting
my pants.
What
do you do? Yeah.
The first 45 minutes of the movie, I don't remember at all. I'm just like, you know, my eyes are, I snuck in a Pliny. So I'm like, I have this beer. I'm like, should I offer him this beer? Like, I don't know what to do. Like, I'm losing my mind.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I don't even really remember that movie. I remember like the second half of it. But that movie is based on that Thomas Pynchon book. So it's super scattered and super
spacey,
schizophrenic and crazy. Yeah. So even if I was paying attention, I probably wouldn't have understood it. But the first half of the movie, I was just like I couldn't concentrate.
Like, are you going to be that guy that just whispers shit in the middle of a film? You want a beer? I got a beer.
I know. I was going through the whole
thing. I didn't put my dick in it, I promise.
Like, I don't know, man. This is a great beer, I swear. I don't know.
Dude, that's a good story,
yeah.
man.
Yeah,
that's a really good story.
But the movie's starting, and so I can't.
Yeah.
And then he left like halfway through, and like I wanted to go chase him, but I don't know. I'm a pussy, so I didn't. But on that note.
That's almost as cool as when I was at Chandon on a date.
Chandon, the winery.
Yeah.
The champagne, right?
And it was Bottle Rocket weekend or whatever, and I see Dave Grohl walking by. People never believe me when I say this shit, but I took a picture with Dave Grohl, so people believe that.
I saw that.
But he's like, "What are you doing here?" I'm like, "Oh, I'm just hanging out, you know, showing my friend here like a good time and nap." I'm like, "What are you doing here, Mr. Grohl?" He's like, "Oh, celebrating my wife's birthday, and we might go check out Bottle Rocket later." I'm like, "Oh, cool." He's like, did you guys want to sit with our groups? There's a bunch of random people. Like, you come hang out with us.
He asked you to sit
with him. I'm like, dude, like, I would say yes, but I literally have nothing to say. Like, I would not be able to contribute. And the fucking chick that I was with, they're just like, who's that? I'm like, Jesus. So yeah, I was like, so already. No. So no. Like, no, I'm going to come. Your wife's going to look at me like, who the fuck is this fucking mook? You know what I mean? Jesus. Yeah, so people don't believe it. Dave Grohl offered
us a seat. So he's a nice
guy. He's a very nice guy. He gave me the warmest, biggest bro hug I've ever had.
Gave you a hug?
Big hug. He embraced me.
Wow.
He embraced me. I was like, dude, I just wanted to say thank you for your years of music. I told him, I admitted to him, I was like, I kind of hated you for a while, but I realized that you're fucking, you know, you're a real fucking musician, bro.
You come from Nirvana.
I mean, for a long time, I blamed him.
You can, well.
I blamed him for Kurt's death. For when I was in my youth.
Can't blame it.
You know, this is the portrayal in the media and stories you hear.
And when you see him thriving for decades afterwards, and then you know, and you think about it, you're just like,
But like late 90s, early 2000s, I was like, no, he's like, you know, he's just a fucking musician, man, and he's good.
You know? He's a pro. He's a pro.
He's like fucking Phil Collins in Genesis.
And those old Foo Fighter music videos from like the mid-90s were always pretty good too.
Oh, so good. Yeah, it's classic. It's classic. But no, man. Like, it's just, I was not starstruck, but I was just like kind of embarrassed. I was like, no, I'm gonna be some fucking schmuck from San Francisco sitting down with Dave Grohl, his wife, her friends, and some random friends of his talking about what?
Right.
What do I have to
you
contribute?
You would just be sitting there, eyes agape, just like in
trying to make a joke, get a laugh. You know, no, it's not going to. It's like, I really appreciate it, but you guys go enjoy like your time. Where I'm just going to go.
Yeah.
And the guy's like, who is that? I'm like, oh, God. You fucked it up. If I was with you, it'd be like, dude, yeah, fuck yeah, we're sitting, dude.
Yeah,
let's talk fucking music.
I have a lot of questions.
Let's compare fucking notes.
Dave, I have a lot of questions.
They're like, Grohl, I've got a lot of questions for you.
Been waiting 38 years for this, okay? Yes, sir. That's pretty good. Goddamn. Well, that's cool, man. Yeah, I don't really get starstruck very often, but there are a handful of people that would do it. And obviously you weren't, otherwise you'd be just like, you know, hanging out. You'd be following him around.
Yeah, no, I was very... I try to be as respectful as possible.
It's like when you see somebody like at a restaurant. Like, you can't just go up to him. Yeah. I mean,
such a nice guy. I know he extended the gesture as a gentleman. Maybe it was genuine, but he was being a gentleman. Right. And I gentlemanly declined.
That's nice. That's up in Napa. Sonoma. Yeah. Napa.
Yeah. It was dope. Oh. Dope as fuck.
All right, well...
I got laid that day anyway, so whatever.
All right, well, so... You want to take a break? We're going to take a little quick break.
Do you want an outro?
Well, we'll do a little Johnny Greenwood.
Inherent
Vice. Play that. Why not? I mean, it makes sense. Dave Grohl has scored a movie yet. Maybe he will at some point. A lot of power chords and screaming, you know. Who knows? I don't know. We will be back in a flash. Been downhearted.
Turn it up just a little bit so I can hear it. Yeah, there we go. That's the vibe. It's funny, you know.
blast from the
past. Also very fucking sad. Like, this is gonna be one of my favorite segments in all episodes, is, you know, the band that was there, kind of like Matthew Sweet, the artist that was there and made an impact, not just me, but like a lot of fucking people.
Oh, everybody.
But what the fuck happened?
So who is this?
This is Primitive Radio Gods.
Yes.
Standing outside a broken phone booth.
Sampling the late great B.B. King, of course.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
So, what happened to this band?
You tell me. That's what we're here
Nothing.
For.
record label disputes. They get dropped. They get picked up, dropped again. Did this band. One Hit Wonders. That's it.
That. Yeah. But do you
Their
know...
Their second release album was just like, no, it fell short.
And you didn't? Have you followed any of their solo? Do they have solo careers?
There's not a word from anybody.
I couldn't tell you one name of a person.
Not one person. This song.
What is this, 92, 93?
Shit, let me see. I want to say 94, 95. Okay,
sure. Yeah, it was a hot track.
96. Yeah, mm-hmm. I'd say 96.
But, you know, there were a lot of bands back then that still perform. Like, I think of, like, the Butthole Surfers.
Oh, Pepper. Yeah, one of the greatest songs of all time.
But they, I mean, but they're, that's such a good band. And they, I mean, I saw them, I mean, it was like 8 or 9 years ago, but I mean, you know, they're still playing.
Yeah, that lead singer's changed career like
they
a few
times. Going. Yeah.
Yeah.
A fucking amazing band. So, like, there are bands out there that, like, that might have had a huge radio hit back then in the 90s. And then maybe they kept going, but.
Well, let's turn it up. I want him to have a strong outro because he's gone now. Rest in peace. I mean, from the music industry.
Who? Wait, who?
The band.
Oh. Are they dead? Do you know that?
I don't know.
Oh, come on.
Further research.
Ah, they're probably in their 20s when this came out.
Let's give him his fair space. Laughable, but this is fucking sad, man.
Okay, so, but Man-Made Sun is the band's sixth album and was released December 26th, 2016.
Yeah, but
so
who would have heard of them?
Yeah, but you're
just
right.
It's just like Matthew Sweet.
They had four studio albums from 1987 to 1990, and I don't know, man. Let's see. Well, that was as the iRails, and then as Primitive Radio Gods from 1996 to 2016. So, yeah, they've been going 20 years.
Who?
They're still around. Yeah, right.
I tell you, though, if they come around, I'm going.
I might have to go to that.
Just for that one song.
For the nostalgia, at least, right? Chris O'Connor, Tim Letario, Luke McAuliffe.
Fucking Jeff mix. Are they mix?
At least one of them. A
couple of Irish guys.
I don't know. Yeah, I had no idea. I did not think you were gonna play that. That's pretty funny.
Did I tell you that I went to a Luke Bryan concert?
No, sir.
I got free tickets, free food, free booze, free transport.
Where was this at?
Shoreline Amphitheater.
Really? When was that?
This was last Saturday.
What? So what? End of September? No. Oh, end of August. Okay. Last Saturday.
Yeah.
Okay.
So November 4th.
All right.
No, it was fun, man. It's a drunk party. It's bro country.
Wait, how did you get free beer and
No, it's free. Fuck the beer. It was free fucking hard liquor. It was Dickel 8.
What? Wait.
Dickel 8 bourbon, Tennessee whiskey, whatever. They fucking invited the vendors to invite their clients, which is me, to come and like pre-party.
Wait, who is this? I don't know who this is. Luke Bryan?
Luke Bryan. You don't know who this is. Luke Bryan, he's like the number one bro country, party country guy. He's like huge. He sells out. He sold out the show.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's country music. Well, it's like country you don't
bro
like.
Bro country? Or,
yeah. Well, I'll give you a sample. You're not going to want to hear it. Pop country. This is one of his big hits. Uh-oh. Light it up.
Uh-oh. Ooh, that's not country.
Well, it's bro country. And this is a pre-release of his new album. Okay, called What Makes You Country.
Definitely not country.
I open my eyes, reach for the phone.
Not a word from you, baby. Hold on, is this Christian rock? Or
no,
country?
It's country. Okay. The album's called What Makes You Country. Remember, but maybe Luke Bryan does. I blew you up in the middle of the night again. You were drinking with your friends.
You ignored it, yeah. But you got it. I get so neurotic. All right, okay, that's it. Yeah.
What? It's Luke Bryan. Millions of people, can't be wrong.
Yes, they can.
A third of the country's population
yes, listens
Look to
Luke
Bryan.
Look at World War II, okay.
Okay, so I put on Facebook, yes. I was like, free concert to Luke Bryan, good seats, free booze, free food, who's coming with me?
So wait, so you bought the tickets?
No, they were given to me.
Would you win a radio contest?
No. The vendors for... The vendors for the bar that I work at invited
Dickel?
Me. Yeah, Dickel 8 Bourbon put it on. The vendors invited me. And so I put it up. I was like, submit resumes here on Facebook. And people were texting me like, dude, I want to go. Like, everyone wanted to go. Apparently, everyone loves Luke Bryan. I mean, it was fun.
Apparently.
Music was shit. Okay. But it was fun.
Sure. Well, enough whiskey and, you know. If it's loud enough.
Oh, yeah. It's just fucking hot chicks everywhere. Country, fucking... You know.
A lot of cowboy boots.
Oh, yeah. Even... You could tell that a lot of people with brand new cowboy boots. Like, nothing worn in.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, it's California.
Yeah.
Was there an opening act?
Yeah, I forgot his name. It's another guy just like him. It was like a cookie cutter kind of thing.
Got it. Yeah, that's... Yeah, I don't know that bro... It's bro country, I guess.
Right? Party country. Yeah, bro country.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't know.
Yeah, you wouldn't know.
I do now, though.
Now you know. First you don't know.
I don't know how you knew about him. I don't know.
No, he's everywhere. I mean, there's no way you can't hear about Luke Bryan. Like, a lot of people I know on Facebook. I live in Pacifica. Okay.
Well, that makes more sense.
Yeah.
That makes more sense. So, you probably hear that at the bars.
I hear it at the bars.
Yeah. It's a very, very conservative.
A woman invited me once to Luke Bryan concert on a date. I said, no, thank you. But I went to this one.
Yeah.
People posted their resumes. I was like, come on, I want to see you. Who's coming with me?
Now, Luke Bell. Now, that's a country guy. I can get behind.
That's Luke Bryan's cousin.
For me, Luke Bell, that's modern country. They're
going to have a band called The Lukes.
Luke Bryan. I don't know about that.
He's huge.
And by the way, when
I say huge, I mean like massively
huge.
I believe it.
100%.
He's talking about like NASCAR.
Because he throws like a little beat on the front of that song and some digital...
Yeah.
You know,
he's got to keep it upbeat. You know, you got to keep it young.
Well, yeah. I mean, you can do that with songwriting. You don't have to do that with hip hop beats for a country song. Anyway, it's all right. I'm sure everybody else is right. I'm wrong. It's okay. Don't worry.
Well, you got to take John Peel's approach to music, man.
To music, yes. You're right.
Wow, that was a pretty harsh insult to music, to Luke Bryan's music.
We covered Luke Bell, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. Yeah. Well, what else do you have?
You know, I'm in a Johnny Jewel kind of mood, man. I don't know, not to rehash the old stuff, but you know. So you were talking about bands or artists that you were disappointed disappeared.
Yeah.
I mean, so, like, from the 90s, a lot of bands disappeared.
But, yeah.
But most people aren't very disappointed, right? Nobody's clamoring for a Blind Melon reunion.
Says who? I love Blind Melon.
I might go to that. I might go to that show. If they open for Butthole Surfers, I'd definitely be there.
No, he died.
Oh, he did die. That's
yeah,
right.
There is
that's
no
right.
Blind Melon. That's he died right. in 97.
Right.
OD'd.
You're right.
Yeah.
You're right. That's
like, what are you talking
right.
about?
That's true. Yeah.
Right. OD'd on ecstasy and heroin.
Like,
I don't know.
The Soul Asylum guy, too, right? Runaway Train.
Soul Asylum guy right. died?
Oh, that guy died like as soon as that song came out. Is that what they were called? That song, Runaway Train?
I don't know.
You don't remember that song?
I know the band and I know their hits, but I don't know the names of the hits. Don't play that. We're not gonna go down this rabbit hole of what happened in the 90s. This isn't a VH1 episode of music.
It was Soul Asylum.
You want to hear? Okay, so I hate Stevie Nicks. I'm just gonna say that out loud. I don't like her.
Yeah, she's a good songwriter.
She's a fucking cunt.
Probably. I don't know. She got Tom Petty into some trouble. I know that.
Fucking bitch. But.
Well, he's got bigger fish to fry.
Like, yeah. Fleetwood Mac. Like, it's because of her, I didn't give Fleetwood Mac the proper chance that most music deserves.
You don't like Lindsey Buckingham or?
I don't know.
Buckingham and Knicks? I mean, come on, you know. I'm not. It's not really in my purview either.
It's
but
not. It falls into the hum.
But the songs.
I want to have an episode to call it the hum, mm-hmm. where we talk about all the music that like it sounds like every other thing, same genre, same era, and only a few things stand out because of the artists themselves. We're gonna have an episode dedicated to that. But for this episode, I'm gonna play the only Fleetwood Mac song that fucking gets me every time. From their 75 self-titled.
Well, there's one song that. Fucks me up, and if it's the same song,
if it's the same song, we'll make out later. I'm just gonna play it, and then we'll talk about the name after.
Do you always trust your first initial feeling? Special knowledge holds true.
Dude, it's the best part about it is that in the car, when I play it fucking loud, I'm that guy that plays Fleetwood Mac really loud in the car. Mm-hmm. I can hit those notes. I love it. It's like, for some reason, I can hit those exact notes.
You sure you're not getting a little help?
Oh, whatever it is. I love singing along to this song, man. This is my favorite Fleetwood Mac song, like, hands down.
That's fair. It's not... And that's what I'm saying. There was never a time in my life where I was listening to a lot of Fleetwood Mac. But
yeah,
this, I mean, you know, when I do, I'm always like, oh yeah,
it has its place.
Yeah,
but I fucking hate Stevie Nicks. She's a fucking witchy cunt.
She's a witchy woman.
She's a witchy fucking cunt. Wiccan. It's just, I don't know.
I thought
it's
you funny. Liked witches.
It's weird. I don't think it's much like Stevie Nicks. Witches. It's more because of her cult following. Of the cunts that love her. I'm gonna sound like a woman hater right now.
Jesus
but Christ. No, it's funny because, like, it's almost she gives. It's like, what's the opposite of slut shaming? She gives slut acceptance to the women out there that are a little too loose for life.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, and those women that agree with that love Stevie Nicks.
So you're that
she has a cult following
that chick from Garbage. You saying as a huge Stevie Nicks fan? Is that where you're gonna go?
No, she's just crazy. Okay. She's just crazy. Shirley Manson's just crazy,
right? Shirley Manson. Sorry,
but Stevie Nicks is like she empowered a whole nation of loose women.
Good. That's why is that a bad thing?
I don't know. Because I'm not that way. I'm not a
sexuality
loose man,
works you know both ways, motherfucker.
Okay. I'm not a loose man.
Men don't own it.
Right. I'm almost prudish in my age now.
That's true. You are getting a little bit more. You used to be open.
Almost, oh, it was a wild can. I was literally. That was a stallion with a hog, dude. But no, I mean, but now I'm starting to get over my stigma for Stevie Nicks and what she did to the band because of her. Like, they fucking, you know, were
what, her always, Lindsay?
On the, always on the cusp of fucking like breaking up.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't care less.
It was always in the background.
When that
of
happened,
my life.
I didn't care. It's
this was the soundtrack to me growing up because of the adults when I was a little boy.
Yeah,
you know, Fleetwood Mac was on all the
listening
time.
To Fleetwood Mac, yeah. Steely Dan.
Allman Brothers.
I don't. Like that. Well, it's, no. Don't fuck with the Allman Brothers. Okay, that's a.
No, I'm saying this is a soundtrack of my childhood.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, it was the era, like the end of the 70s, beginning of the 80s. But I was like beginning of the 80s. So.
Yeah. Yeah. You know.
It's again. Just it has this like it's like this weird, almost pastel, like colored glasses over my eyes where I see this image, of my childhood and this music's playing in the background. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of how it is for me too, you know, and so that's why when I do hear something, I'm like, oh yeah, it's not bad.
It's not, and it's actually more. It's actually that song is really fucking good. It stands out from.
That's
all
what I'm saying.
Songs.
Like maybe the arrangements were a little too 80s, but if like the but the songs are good, you know.
No, I think that it plays. It plays.
Yeah, it plays, true.
Man. That's Crystal. True. That's Crystal by Fleetwood Mac from the self-titled '75 album Fleetwood Mac, but. It gets me, dude. I don't know what it is, but it gets me like choked up a little bit.
Yeah.
Like his passion in his words, what he's saying. Like, well, I think I have the lyrics here. Like, let it load for a second here. When he says, through the crystal, like a clear water fountain, drove me like a magnet. Then I knew in the crystalline knowledge of you drove me through the mountains, through the crystal lake and clear water fountains drove me like it's fucking it's super poetic, bro.
Can't argue.
I'm gonna get that tattooed. In the crystalline knowledge of you. Yeah, that's dope. That's dope. I'm gonna put that in my fucking my marriage vows.
I don't know.
And I can hit those notes.
Can you?
Yeah. I'm on the way to dinner. I'm gonna hit those notes.
Sure.
In the car.
It has to be in the shower or the car.
Yeah.
All right, well, I'm not gonna take a shower with you, so it's gonna have to be the car.
Oh man. Who was I listening to the other day that I was like, you always talk about him, but I was like, I can't listen to this shit. I forget.
What?
This whole that era. What the fuck was it?
What era? 80s?
It was what was it? And I was like, oh, it sounds like droll shit like everything else. Nothing stood out about it.
Something that I always talk about? I don't know.
It's a singer. I forget. Anyways, I'll get back to it. No, that's... You want another movie soundtrack?
That's outrageous.
I got another movie soundtrack for you.
Movie soundtracks? Well, I mean... Yeah, you know, Nick Cave is another
yeah.
guy that's
well,
been
yeah.
doing soundtracks for movies for some time now.
Yeah.
He did The Road. He did Lawless. Is that the name of that Tom Hardy movie?
Yeah.
Hell or High Water recently, which is really good. And he picked a lot of great songs also that he didn't write, like Towns Van Zandt songs and stuff. Yeah.
You know about the weirdness about his son's death. And
oh, yeah, his son died recently. I mean,
his
it
son was on
like
a hallucinogens, fell off a cliff.
Something like that, yeah.
Landed on the beach, kind of like died.
Mm. Yeah.
It's funny because he was producing an album, and there's a line in one of the tracks that says, when you fell... And then you died. And he's been kind of... It's weird because he's actually quoted... He's been quoted saying, like, if your music doesn't reflect real life, it isn't real music, and, you know, it should be almost a prediction of what will,
oh, so you're
will
saying
happen.
He's like a he predi- like Nostradamus.
Are, yeah, it's like it's weird. Music. He's like okay. He's predicting his own, like, fate. And there's a film made that you can't watch it, like...
The
unless you get
black
invited,
and white documentary.
Yeah, it's only being shown like in
no.
Random
I saw
theater.
That. It's next time with feeling. Is that the name of it?
I don't know.
Or one more time with feeling. Yeah, I saw that. It was.
Did you see it at the theater? Like a small
no.
release? Where was it?
It's on Amazon, I think.
Right? Is it on Amazon?
Yeah,
like
it's all
recently?
Black and white. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. It got recent release because I know a year ago you could only see in the theaters when it came to town.
Yeah, I remember. I think it was playing at the Embarcadero. That was
for like
a week.
That's
maybe,
it. Yeah.
Or like a night. Yeah,
I think it was one night.
And he's played. I mean, he played here just a couple months ago.
Yeah,
you know, he's still going. It's you know,
tragic, maybe, tragic.
What are you gonna do? Yeah,
I didn't know they were Australian.
Yeah, yeah. I was just gonna say he's Australian. He, you know, they're all tough.
They're fucking, you know, like fucking inmates, prisoners in the island. Well, so what are we gonna listen to?
Well, I mean, I don't know. You want to listen to like a little Nick Cave, or, you know, for
soundtrack stuff? I got soundtrack. Well, I got one more soundtrack track.
I did want to touch on Angelo Badalamenti, just because we touched on the Twin Peaks thing, but, you know, he's another guy that's been doing soundtracks for a long time, and more than that, a lot of instrumental pieces. And when you hear his work, that's Angelo.
Can we go back and edit out the loose women of America? That's so bad.
I'm telling you, man.
It's so bad.
There's nothing wrong with that.
I'm not slut shaming here. I'm just saying. Yeah. You know, there's a certain type of woman that swears by Stevie Nicks.
I don't know. I don't know if that's true. And you do owe me $20.
I do. Oh, that's right. I didn't want to bring that up.
Not to bring up a Maudlin note, but we've lost a few. We lost Harry Dean Stanton. We lost Tom Petty, of course. I say we, like he was part of my family, but
yeah.
Well, you thought he was going to hang on.
No, because they said he was, man. There was like
he was hanging on. Like he was still alive. Release. Yeah. But they pulled the plug, I think.
Fuck, man.
You would hope.
I got bummed out. That was a part of my childhood. Like,
sure.
Yeah. Free Fallin' came out and taking those trips to fucking Reno with the family, and it was on the radio all the time on TV for music video.
I think it was The Waiting. I think that was the song that
I
first remember. Yeah. Like, you know, as a kid.
His obsession with Johnny Depp was really weird.
He's an obsession with Johnny Depp?
He was in like a few of his music videos.
Was he?
Yeah. Free Fallin', what's the Alice in Wonderland video one? What? Come on. You know what I'm talking about. You know where he plays the Mad Hatter, Alice in Wonderland.
I don't.
It's a music video.
I didn't get it.
It's a famous song.
Until I was a little older.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we
Forget. I swore by MTV.
Yeah, we didn't have one when I was a kid.
We didn't have it. Took a little while. Burned the house down.
Last Dance with Mary Jane. That was
more 90s. Yeah. No. It was the other one.
That was more like, it's probably his last big hit. Which was in the early 90s, mid-90s, but I don't know. I don't remember that. That's interesting. Jim Jarmusch, another guy that's, his movies, you know, lately, whatever, but he always has great soundtracks. I think The Limits of Control, he had Boris. And actually, I think Boris might have a new album. I know that they're touring right now, and that would be...
Boris.
Yeah.
Sounds like the band that I picked up in Uber in Oakland, or I picked up a band and they're called Stalin. Yeah, they're like a metal band.
Pretty good. That's
their band's called Stalin. And they're like, dude, visit our show, visit our website. Tell them about the podcast. They're like Stalin.org. I'm like, how the fuck did you get that? It's like, we bought it from a fucking teacher.
That's awesome.
No, but I picked them up in in the East Bay. Dropped them off in Oakland. Two of the lead guitarists and like the lead singer.
Were they Russian or
the lead guitarist was Russian.
Really?
Yeah, lead singer started talking about like current socioeconomic politics in San Francisco, whatever.
Well, I hope so.
Oh yeah, it was intense. And then I mentioned like hanging out at the JCC and picking up old Jewish women. He's like, I love old Jewish women. Broke the ice. Anyways, no, this is dope. He had very strong opinions about music.
World War II reference. Okay, all right. Well, yeah, no, I don't. You know. You don't remember in here, Limits of Control, the Jim Jarmusch movie? It's like an action movie with no action. And no. Boris, I'm pretty sure Boris and. Oh, Christ. Somebody's going to email us. And
nope.
Did like the entire soundtrack. It was fucking.
Couldn't tell you.
All right. Well, fuck it. We're going to listen to.
Play something.
Absolutego.
Sounds like Boris.
Japanese
band.
Yeah. Experimental, whatever you want to call it, you know.
Yeah.
Noise.
Well, they love westernized style and music.
Well, they're just so goddamn strong. It's such a strong and hardcore, solid band, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Supposedly they're named after a song of the same name on the Melvins 1991
Melvins,
album,
yeah.
Bullhead.
Yeah, yeah, punk.
Yeah, they were originally a four-piece band, but I think they dropped down to a three. But anyway, you know, very powerful stuff, especially for a movie. You know, but although in that movie it's just pure doom, you know.
Interesting. I gotta check that out. Something I missed. I want to go to the softer side of the 80s.
Well, since you said Johnny Depp, I was thinking of Dead Man.
Yeah, Jim Jarmusch. I've seen that movie in theater like seven times.
Where and you know who did the entire score for that movie?
Vaguely.
Neil Young.
Man. Neil Young.
Come on. Oh yeah. That's a great movie.
That movie fucks with my head. But I used when Roxy or when the Red Vic was open on 8th Street every year. Okay. Yeah, they would show like annually just all these Wild Style, Dead Man. You know, Exorcist, you know, all these random just movies. They'd show it annually.
Yeah.
And that's, I saw Dead Man like 7 years in a row.
That's awesome. That's, Iggy Pop.
Yeah.
Like wearing a bonnet. Like, that movie is crazy.
It's that's a fucked up movie.
It's a great movie.
That's where Johnny Depp lost his mind.
Did Neil Young, I think, also did the music for Where the Buffaloes Roam? The movie about Thomas Hunter S. Thompson.
You know Neil Young is on Apple Music now?
He needs to do more of that.
Did I tell you that?
He's back on Spotify.
That's crazy. I just saw that like a few weeks ago. I'm like, what the fuck? His whole catalog.
I don't know what's going on. It's all right.
I think he finally gave in.
Nah.
Yeah.
No, man. Neil's the only guy that's never given in.
He just wanted people to hear his music. I think Pono is like kind of like a flash.
I think he's done with Pono. Yeah, it's probably true. Yeah. But, you know, he stopped Bridge School, and that's why I was super pissed, because this year... You know, usually at the end of
maybe
October,
he's donating. Maybe he's probably going to announce that he's going to donate the funds from iTunes and Spotify.
I doubt it. He lost like half his ranch, man. He's, you know, it's.
Is that doing
times it? Aren't like horrible, but yeah, I mean, times have been better.
He went from 400 million to 100 million.
I don't know. Who knows? He's never done an ad. He's never given his music for any ad ever.
He's like the Fugazi
But he did do that Supreme ad, which I don't understand. He didn't have music or anything. It was just he posed for that Supreme ad. Like, this is a couple years ago, but I'm still very curious about that. I'd love to run into Neil, although nobody runs into Neil. He's not Dave Grohl.
He's not accessible.
Yeah, but I don't know, man. Yeah, it's a very disturbing fact that there's no Bridge School. Even if you don't go, it's nice to know that it's going on. You know.
Yeah.
Either way.
I've never gone. It'd be nice if I've gone.
But now I guess at Shoreline it's
Luke Bryan. Yeah. Awesome stuff, man.
So we have that.
Well, I mean, I wanted to give you one. I have like my list of top films, you know.
Movie.
Legend.
Scores or soundtrack?
Yeah, Legend with Tom Cruise. Legend. Tim Curry as the devil. Favorite director, Ridley Scott.
Yeah, but what about now? He's like completely recasting that jump. Well, anyway, that's different. That's different. So, okay, go on.
So, Legend, the movie, Tom Cruise plays like this, like a little wood nymph boy, falls in love with a princess.
Not to be confused with the 2015 movie starring Tom Hardy with the same name, Legend. Yeah, no, 1985. Yes.
Tim Curry plays the devil. Mia Sara plays the princess.
Mia Sara.
Yeah.
Wow.
Love of my life.
Yeah, what happened to her?
She was only 14 in that movie.
Ooh, okay. Sorry.
It's okay because she was 12 years older than me.
It's true.
So, Brian Ferry, the other leading contestant for Voice of the 80s, Roxy Music, Brian Ferry.
The other meaning Morrissey?
No, the other meaning Peter Murphy.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's weird.
You're going to forsake Morrissey?
Morrissey was never considered Voice of the 80s. People don't like him. No, like mainstream doesn't like
Oh, okay. Voice. Yeah. All right. Official voice.
Yeah,
okay.
Official voice.
Got it.
So it's always been between Brian Ferry and Peter Murphy. But anyways, Brian Ferry does one song for Legend soundtrack. The video is so corny. He's wearing shoulder pads. He's a silhouette image, shadow image, wearing 80s leather jacket with shoulder pads, singing this track. It's amazing. It's an amazing track. But the video's shit. It's hilarious. And
is your love strong enough?
Is your lung strong? Yeah, is your love strong enough?
All right. Give it here to we me. Go.
You wrote it again. Someone I would die for. Yeah. Oh man, dude, when he hits that note, I mean, you can hear it. It's produced, you know, it's like put through the machine, change the equalizer. But
it's
Brian funny. Ferry, man, his voice is just, fuck, man, what an instrument. If you ever get a chance to go through Roxy Music's catalog, like, he's got some real strong hits.
Mm-hmm.
But this track, I think, really exposes what he can do with his instrument, the voice.
Was this in an album, or was this for the movie?
It was in an album, but it was, I think it was premiered in the film. I don't know. I was too young to understand that stuff. I just knew the movie, the soundtrack.
That's kind of.
I guess I could go back and look, but
It actually brings up another 1985. Song from a movie that I'm thinking of that actually is Lindsey Buckingham.
Okay.
Which is a very hard song to find. And I can't find
it. There's some songs on any you album. Cannot find.
Yeah, I can't find this song on any album. It's, do you remember Time Bomb Town? Do you remember that song?
No. No.
All right, let's see if I can. Let's see what
Dude,
we
got.
Yeah. Lindsey Buckingham.
Some strange information. I keep it to myself.
Yeah, whatever happened to that song?
I don't know.
I fucking love that song, man. I don't know why, but it's so good.
It's a snippet. You don't hear, like, a lot of the... You hear, like, what, 15 seconds of this?
Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah.
And... Oh, God. It's like, look, Lindsay, like, his voice, you know?
It sounds like it's maybe a montage sequence.
He's doing that, like, almost like tremolo staccato with his voice. It's so good, man.
Yeah.
What is it? What did you say?
So it sounds like it's a part of a montage sequence.
I should remember. I don't know. I just
Back
remember,
to the Future. Remember,
yeah, it's yeah. Back to the Future, 85. I'm almost certain the original was 85. Same year as Legend.
Oh, right? Yeah.
But for some reason, man, same this year, song gets me.
Different influences. People look at me like, that's one of your top five favorite films? I'm like, yeah, dude, Legend. Tim Curry plays the fucking devil.
You know the CEO for Netflix listens to our show, so if in the next month Legend is on Netflix, we'll have the Low Spark to thank.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm sorry.
I appreciate that. It's been a while. I haven't seen that movie in at least 20
years. I watch it once a month. It's that good, man. It's a fucking perfect movie. And there's like... other edits. There's European theatrical release, there's American theatrical release, and there's director's cut. Really, Scott's a genius. Like, I don't care what anybody says. One of the greatest filmmakers of all time. My favorite director ever.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know about that.
But, Alien.
Okay.
Legend.
Sure.
Do you want me to keep going?
You don't have to, but I mean, greatest director of all time. I don't know about that.
Dude. Well, fuck. I mean, even
what about those... Tony Scott? What about his brother? All right,
hey, rest in peace, man.
True fuck. Romance. Come on, man.
No, I know True Romance.
Hard to beat that.
Days of Thunder.
Sure.
He did Top Gun.
Did he do Top Gun?
Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah. Yeah.
Tony Scott, man. Rest in peace. Jumped off the LA bridge.
What are you, Goose? I'll be Iceman.
No. I'm Joker.
Oh, Joker. All right.
Yeah, I'm Joker.
Yeah, that's pretty good. What about Viper, Tom Skerritt?
Yeah, Viper.
He's the old guy. I kind of like that. Although, if I were in the military...
No, I'll be Viper. No, yeah, that's what I meant. Viper. Joker was the other guy.
Oh, shit. I remember... Yeah, Viper's Tom Skerritt.
Nobody wants to be Maverick. Maverick's a prick. You know, they you know, because Val Kilmer's dying, that they announced that they're going to do a sequel, right?
Top Gun 2. What are you talking about?
Val Kilmer's dying, man.
Hold on. What are you talking about?
He has cancer.
Val Kilmer is dying. Come on.
Yeah,
no
he's
way.
Dying. Yeah.
Val Kilmer's a badass. I know he, like, ballooned. He's, like, huge.
No. There's pictures of him and his growth. His huge growth. Yeah, he has tumors.
Like a tumor?
Yeah,
tumors?
Yeah.
Well, you know, tumors are...
He's not doing good, man.
Tumors aren't always...
He's finally come public with it, and he has cancer.
How did I miss this? I don't
know. I don't know, and he's petitioning to get, like, Top Gun 2. Tom Cruise, I think, said he would do it. I think Ridley Scott said he would direct it in his brother's absence. It's weird.
I don't know. Anthony Edwards, yes. He's Goose, and...
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, they're all still going, I'm assuming.
No, Goose is dead. It was going to be like a montage, a flashback. That's true. Goose.
Right, yeah, which wouldn't really work.
Goose dies.
Because,
or does he? Maybe he's in Black Ops.
Right.
I don't know.
Right.
He's a black operative now. Zombie Goose.
Yeah, captured. I don't know, man. I don't know. That's weird. This is weird.
Yeah,
that's very sad. That's very sad news. You know, I like me some Val Kilmer.
Oh, man.
He's
shit.
Kind of, you know.
His greatest film of all time, The Saint. Also another amazing soundtrack.
Cold Fusion. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's his best movie? I don't know.
Why? I mean, what else is there? Like,
good point.
And he played Batman. Pretty good. Brainiac or what's it called?
Yeah. What's the name of that?
That was like Brainiac or...
Genius?
Genius, yeah.
Real Genius?
Real Genius.
Yeah. That was good.
That was good. But it wasn't, wasn't the same.
When Top Gun came out, he was the star.
Tom Cruise wasn't really a star yet, compared to fucking Val Kilmer.
Yeah, it was Val Kilmer's movie. Yeah, he was a bad... Oh, Tombstone. Fuck you. Doc Holliday.
Yeah, that's his greatest role, but not his greatest movie.
That movie's amazing. Come on.
That's one of the greatest roles ever captured on film.
I think so.
Ever.
I think so.
But it's not his best movie. The Saint is his best movie. That's his movie.
Frederick fucking Chopin.
I posted it on Facebook, and it, like, everyone knew what I was talking about. Frederick fucking Chopin. What we have here is he's an educated man. Ringo here is an educated man. Or the most famous line, And it's incontestable.
I didn't want to say that.
Mandela effect saying it's been said two different ways.
I didn't want to say that one.
I'm your Huckleberry or I'll be your Huckleberry?
No, I'm your Huckleberry.
Yeah, but the Mandela effect says it's different.
From what?
They're saying it's quoted in print.
They reshot the movie?
Yeah. No, Mandela. You don't know what the Mandela effect
no,
is?
No, I do. That's what I'm saying. Like, so what?
Two different alternate universes. Saying that lines in movies have been altered in different universes, and we are privy to both.
So there are people that think it's I'll be your Huckleberry, or they they remember it that way.
Yeah,
like the Sinbad.
Yeah, exactly. Falls into all that.
I don't think so.
Just like the life is like a box of chocolates.
What? What's wrong?
It says that on the box of the fucking VHS, but in the film, it says life is a box of chocolates.
No. No, in the film, it's life is like.
Nope.
Yes.
Nope. Watch it.
Okay, if that's not true, then there is a Mandela effect. But I will.
That's the guy was like 100% proof. The box says in print.
I do.
Quote:
come on.
Life is like a box of chocolates.
He says that. That's what he says.
He doesn't. In the film, he replayed it. He put in the VHS. He's like, wow.
No, somebody edited it out and put it on YouTube. Watch that movie. Right?
Watch the movie. He doesn't say that.
$20. You want to get that $20?
Another
back
$20. Double or nothing.
Yeah, I'll bet. Yeah.
Double or nothing.
Yeah, I'll bet you that.
Double or nothing. All right, shake on it. You just lost $40. You just lost $40.
I didn't lose $40. No, it would be.
We're gonna look it up right now. Do you want to look it up?
Please do.
No, not on the show.
Right. Like, yeah. No. And everybody listening is vindicating me from their seats right now.
It's in print, quoted, life is like a box of chocolates. Right, but in the film, he says life is.
No.
Mom always said life is a box of chocolates.
Nope.
That's right.
Nope. And if that's true, I almost shit myself. The Mandela effect is real.
I was in bed and sobered up drunk 2 in the morning. I'm like, what the fuck? The Mandela effect is fucking real.
I hope you don't mind paying for dinner tonight, but that's
okay. We're gonna watch it and we'll see. All right. The guy is like, I was surprised.
But you can't cherry pick a YouTube video where somebody purposely
just go to any YouTube
video.
Go to any YouTube video. Right. Any video. Any clip of the film. Any clip. You're buying dinner. I'm eating for free tonight.
I've seen that movie many times.
I'm going to tell them, do not put on the employee discount because you're paying. So we're going to just wrap it up right now because we're going to go.
Well, there's one song. I was going to ask you, like, what one song has been in your head that you can't get out because. And we've sort of touched on it already, but before we outro, figured we owed them one more. Do you have anything?
I always have something, man.
Yeah.
Shit. Badly Drawn Boy.
Oh, ooh.
Yeah.
Are we going there?
We can go there. Let me. So the album that I'm going to pull up is going to be 1 plus 1 is 1.
Okay.
Hold on. Sorry, it was like a short notice. Yeah, so everyone knows Badly Drawn Boy. Honestly, it was the greatest live show I've ever seen in my life. It was this three-piece band at the Fillmore.
All right, well, I'm going to play... Well, you know, there's...
Okay, so this is the outro song for this album, 1 plus 1 is 1 by Badly Drawn Boy, circa 2004. And the song is called Life Turned Upside Down. And the reason why it hits me is because it's one of those things where they record it forward, play it backwards, and then tape it forward. So it sounds like it's got that sucked in thing. And then the song is called Life... And then when he hits that note, life turns upside down, and then he flips it, and it plays normal.
Right.
So pay close attention to the first 30 seconds of the song.
One, two, three, four. Turned upside down, but then maybe it's just been put back the right way around. All your dreams realized, there's no fire in your eyes, and despite of its size, you soon realize that it's all right. Tonight feels right. I There's a cross that nobody should really have to bear, but then maybe that's just when life's treating you fair. There are lessons you learn when you've waited your turn, and things didn't turn out quite the way that you dreamt about. But it still feels right.
Wow.
What year is that?
2004, man. This is, he was touring for this album when I saw him play at the Fillmore. So.
Oh, that was.
He played this song, and everyone was like, fuck.
It was new back then.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. He's like, oh, it's a new song. His stage performance, dude. Oh, fuck.
How did he do that first part on stage? Backwards.
He just sang it straight.
Oh, okay.
I mean, he starts off a 2-minute a cappella and a solo guitar. You know, like, it's just, I can't explain. Honestly, to me, he's like one of the greatest living artists right now. Even though he hasn't been really relevant in the past like 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
His albums are just, he has 3 albums. Hour of the Bewilderbeast, Have You Fed the Fish, and 1+1=1. Those 3 albums, you don't need any more music than that.
So he's not currently producing?
He is. He's doing soundtracks, things like that, producing stuff, but nothing that everyone's taking note of, you know?
Yeah. That's interesting.
He's not the most
prevalent
artist.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean,
it's not that it's hard. I think he's just revving up. Like, he's the type of guy that, like, he's a musician, bro. He doesn't need to do anything but play.
He doesn't play with other bands, or does he?
He has his band. He's had this band since the beginning, so.
Yeah.
They seem like nice dudes, but I know he switched out touring bands. That's different. That's very different than studio band.
Right.
That song's been, I hear it like once a day. Usually wake up to that. Did you have one that's been resonating?
Yeah, it's by Desire, which is another Johnny Jewel
okay
project, you know. It's lately, I don't know why. I think, and Twin Peaks ended a while ago, but you know, it's still the best thing I've heard all year. And this is old, but still, it just sort of puts you in that mood.
Yeah.
But this is Under Your Spell by Desire.
desire? I don't know. Do you think this feeling can last forever? You mean like forever, ever? Forever, ever?
Forever. Forever, ever?
Sorry, man. I don't know.
It's good.
I can't get it out of my head.
It's very good.
It's so good.
I hope so. And
especially since like Stranger Things has been in the atmosphere lately. There's something about that. Yeah.
Great sound, great tapping soundtrack, into... amazing intro. Kids are acting great. The show sucks.
No, come on. Hold on. I still haven't finished the second, so don't.
No, oh no, it's good.
No, the show's
it's
actually
good.
Great.
It's just that I know. I see what they're doing.
No, man.
They're twanging the nostalgia strings.
No. It's not that. They have recreated that atmosphere, and that's. I don't know how, and I still don't know how. Don't worry. Anyway, that's for another show.
Jewish Hollywood magic.
Fuck. I don't think the Duffer brother. Anyway. Well, we do need to wrap it up.
We do.
But I'm dancing over here, so I don't know.
I like the concept of us ending on a positive note on the episodes. A little hope.
Yeah.
You know, I also, with this, I want to congratulate fucking Slow Dive for, after a 22-year hiatus, coming back and taking their throne of, like, where they belong in the music industry. And they produced this fucking album, self-titled. And their show was amazing. The imprint they've left on me for, like, music... just upholding like general artistry and like music and, you know, film and things that we love and stuff, and they killed it, and I think it's fucking awesome. I have hope for other bands that should come back, you know, Primitive Radio Gods, if you're listening.
No, but apparently they have been around.
Yeah,
I said, been, yeah, yeah.
Been something attention. Relevant, something, you know, that burst through the fucking...
Next time.
The Slow Dive for sure is going to be on the lips of like a lot of people in the coming months, especially in the new year. And yeah, I think it's appropriate that we outro with their intro track to their new album. So, album.
Just a reminder, please contact us with any questions, comments, complaints, observations, nude photos, what have you.
Whatever.
Mostly music podcast at gmail.com. It's been a pleasure. Live and unlive. From San Francisco, California, this is Ignatius Palafox.
I am still the low spark. And this is Slow Mo by Slow Dive.
Slow Mo by Slow Dive.